And welcome back. How have civil rights and social justice demonstrations changed over the years? 50 years ago in St. Louis, Percy Green was right in the middle of struggles for equality in society and in the workplace. He climbed the arch and crashed the Veiled Prophet ball in protest. In recent years, Cori Bush, an activist who is a pastor, has been part of demonstrations following Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, and more recently in connection with the acquittal of former police officer Jason Stockley. Cori Bush is 41, Percy Green, 82. We all sat down together, and I asked Green how he looks at the demonstrations of this era.
I'm loving it. I am so proud of the protesting and the consistency of it. Because these are issues that, without the protesting, they are not ever dealt with. And with the protesting, it keeps everyone conscious that we have major problems that needs to be addressed. And this police killing, this police murdering of black people has been going on all during the time that I was protesting. I used to have signs. I used to paint on buildings. Stop white police from killing us. And this was over 50 years ago.
In terms of tactics and strategies, are they different today or pretty much the same?
No, they're comparable. You see, at the time, we didn't have social media. We didn't have the internet. But the process is still the same. We still had to print up literature and try to distribute the information to the larger community in order to try to make them aware of the nature of the protests and why. And then, of course, now you have the internet, and it makes it a little lot more easier. You have a larger potential audience, but it's still the same. Someone still have to make the information known to the community so you can get some feedback as to whether or not they're going to support it or not. Thankful enough that we have a large community, both black and white, that is responding.
Cori, let me put the same question to you. You're not old enough to remember the 1960s like some people I can mention in this room. But you're familiar. You've seen the films. You've read the books. When you look back, what are you seeing in terms of the way business was conducted on the streets?
So I was brought up in a household where I was fed. We were fed the civil rights movement. Eyes on the Prize was like you watch that instead of regular TV, you know. Mm-hmm. And so just watching what happened, all the movies and everything, what happened in Selma, what happened just all over in different parts of the South. I remember thinking, if I was born back then, what would I have done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking I'd be dead because I don't know if I could handle myself, you know, in a way that would have kept me safe or my family safe. But now looking at the times that we're living in now, I see what I would have done. Mm-hmm. And I think that much respect to those that fought then, like Percy Green and so many others that are still in the fight now, that look at what we're doing now, and instead of saying you're doing it wrong or you're not doing it like we did it, you know, but are wanting to join with us and say, you all go, you know, it's your turn now. We're going to mm-hmm. support you.
But when you look at it, aside from what Percy mentioned with mm-hmm. regard to social media, which certainly has made a huge difference, it's pretty much the same, isn't it? Or is it?
I would say, you know, I think there are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of similarities. But the social media thing has just made this into a whole other, like, beast, because it's one thing to grow up and to see the movies and to be taught that these things happened. It's another thing to then start to see it and see it on a mass level. So we see all of these police killings, but then we also see the police not being brought to justice. And so having it seen. So it's one thing, like Percy said, passing out literature, trying to get the word out, making sure that people hear it that way. But now, you know, you don't even have to do anything. You're just scrolling and you see one after the other after the other. So two things. One way, I think we get desensitized to it. So now it's like, oh, it's another one. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, some people are saying, this is so much, we have to do something. So I think I think at that time this happened and then getting the word out was effective. Maybe it wasn't as many people being desensitized to it because you didn't get to see as many people see it happening as much as it was actually happening.
See, in addition to that, I could also say it could very well be the same based upon the proportion. See, we had the population, you look at the population then, look at the population now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the concern, the people that are concerned now as a result of the advent of social media, the internet, if you will, could very well be proportioned to what the number of people that we were able to reach by way of radio and TV, and especially the nature of us using jiu-jitsu in order to get mm-hmm. the media out to cover the events that we were carrying on in terms of protest.
By jiu-jitsu, what do you mean? Is it stunts?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, we realized early on that if we would call a press conference just on the nature of having a press conference that we want to announce something, the white news media would ignore it. But if we would say that there's a high probability there are going to be some people arrested, mm-hmm. well, then the news media will come out.
Let me tell you something that I'm hearing, and that is a lot of people are surprised today to see so many white people involved with the African-American demonstrators. And I would say to them, ask Percy Green, because he had a lot of white colleagues in your day as well.
That's true. That is so true. And I think that basically the reason why that you have probably proportionally or maybe a little bit more proportionally than what I had at the time in support is probably because of the cameras, the iPhones and the cameras. I think many whites were conditioned to think that blacks were making up these particular conditions that we were claiming that we were living under, racism and so on and so forth. But when whites or fair-minded, relatively fair-minded whites now can see how policemen, white policemen, were abusing their authority, shooting folks and everything, and then the lying. You see, now whites can compare what white policemen used to say versus the documentation that they come up with, and they can see that how could that be when they're seeing one thing and their reports are saying something else? And if that is the case now, whites are beginning to say, well, these policemen must have been lying all along at the time that we were supporting them out of ignorance.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on that, Corey?
So I think some of it also, going along with what you just said, Percy, a lot of our white allies, now they can see what's happening at the protests. So even if they may not have wanted to come out before, you know, because they were afraid, or so many have come to me and said, you know, well, I didn't come out during Ferguson and I'm sorry, but I was afraid of what was going on, or we heard so many things. Now they're looking to see what's actually happening at these protests. You know, well, oh, I didn't realize that's what you all were doing. I'm coming out and I'm bringing three mm-hmm. or four people with me. And actually, let's take it back to 45. After 45 became our president, the Women's March and the Sister Marches brought so many people out that had never hit the ground before. And so it radicalized so many people that had not ever thought that they would ever protest before.
Are they effective?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yes. I mean, protests are very effective because it does two things. It enlightens folks as to the issues. It's communicating with the larger audience. And then at the same time, it has to be economic. It has to be able to be effective by causing some economics. It impinges the economics of those that are responsible, meaning the white power structure.
Well, let me put it to you this way. The demonstrators in the streets today are demonstrating for the same thing that you were in the 60s. So how effective can they be?
Well, the effectiveness is, again, we're dealing with the population, the size, the scope. You see, once upon a time, the black population here in the city of St. Louis, at the time that I took on Southwestern Bell and the utility companies, we were only 10% of the population. And, of course, now, I mean, here in 2017, we're a little better than 50% of the population. So when you begin to make the comparison, 50%. But I hear what you're saying loud and clear. What about the effectiveness? Well, you know, protests, it have pits and valleys. Sometimes, I mean, you're carrying on the protest. It reaches a certain amount of success. And then people begin to say, well, after we make certain demands and the laws come along and ratify the substance of the protest, many people then began to feel as if that once laws are passed, then they would automatically be enforced, but not realizing, we now realize that the power structure is such that you can pass laws that will be supportive of your ideals and then turn right around. But if you don't get the enforcement, things will remain as they had been. And that's what we're dealing with right now in terms of these police shootings. I mean, there was a time when it was lawful for a policeman to shoot a so-called fleeing suspect, you know. Mm-hmm. But now they've changed. Now the policemen modify their lives and then say the person turned, faced them and pointed something that they thought was a weapon, and therefore that justifies their killing.
Let me turn that back to you, Corey, with regard to the effectiveness. This current situation, is it 9, 10, 11 days old, something like that?
Yes.
Have you seen them be effective in any way yet?
Oh, yes. I'll say they're effective just looking at what happened during Ferguson and seeing, you know, first of all, our narrative, it was snatched from us when we didn't even know that we needed to keep one. We didn't realize we needed to make sure that what we were fighting for was clear. And now that we are putting out 100%, our message is stop killing us. Our message is y'all gonna stop killing us. Now that we've been saying that and we've been looking, we've seen how people who would not stand for us before are standing with us. I don't know if anybody has noticed, but we've had so many elected officials out there on the streets joined in with us in the street. We've had so many clergy. Right now, the generational divide is broken. The divide between clergy and the community, business leaders and the community, all of those things have been broken down this time because we started this thing out differently, like saying, hey, we're going to fight this together.
This is different. This is different than Ferguson.
But unless it become economically feasible, you see, I think that it's effective in terms of enlightening people. I don't think that we have stopped white policemen from killing unarmed black men or brown men and being convicted. In other words, what I say in essence is that this is a system of what I define as the white police establishment. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the prosecuting attorneys, the mayors, the prosecuting attorneys, the judges, they all benefit from the white police males who are shooting black males. And why do I say that? It's because they mainly campaign on getting tough on crime. And when they say that, I mean, mayors, they claim that they want to be mayor because they want to be tough on crime. Prosecuting attorneys claim as if they want to be tough on crime. Judges, if they are elected, they want to be all three of them, basically. And if you look at the color of all of those offices, these are primarily white, very few black. But the point is that when they argue that they are campaigning, when they're campaigning claiming that they want to be tough on crime, that is a dog whistle. They're meaning that they won't be tough on black folks. Mm-hmm. And they all, for all practical purposes, are elected as a result of such.
And I also think that we've been effective in the way of economics. We have been able, as of a few days ago, $8 million has been, we've stopped $8 million from rolling into different areas where, you know, just through the concert shutdowns and different malls and so many different places, $8 million just by regular folks, you know, hitting the streets. So when you start messing with people's money, they pay attention. And so now we have all of these business owners coming together, these leaders saying, hey, you know, we're standing with the protests, you know, because these are the people that actually support us. These are the people that come to our shops. And so we need to stand with them. So I think that when you start affecting people's money, that's when you know you're effective.
Well, let me take that one step further and point towards some of these demonstrations today and in the past have involved burning and looting and costing people, in many cases, who provide the jobs for the people who need them most. That's an economic side of this equation as well, and that is damaging to the cause.
Well, you're going to have what I consider as collateral damage in the struggle and whatnot, you know.
Right.
Let's face it, all during the protest movement, where there was just strictly picketing and just issuing press statements, You had whites that would come in and bum the churches of where black folks were attending church and was killed or whatnot.
Birmingham.
And then if there's any other instances where there is protest or whatnot, you're going to have that. And then in some cases, you have some people, they deal with certain situations differently. Some people feel as if that the time for passive resistance is long overdue, that you have to do something else to the establishment to cost them where they can be held accountable. In some cases, you have some, and if the protest movement of nonviolence is not recognized, sooner or later, we're going to find ourselves whereby you're going to have youngsters, black and whites, who are going to feel as if that the system has failed and the only way to deal with it is violence. And therefore, you're going to have some real pain on each side or whatnot, you know.
And then you can replace a broken window, but you can't replace an Anthony Lamar Smith. You know, we can do those things. We can come together as a community and replace inanimate objects. But when we're talking about lives, so if all of those people that are angry about broken windows and broken flower pots and all of those things, if they come together and say, hey, we're tired of this, or we're tired, I'll even take it a step further. Blue Lives Matter. All lives matter. If all of them came together and said, you know what, we're tired of this. I might not care about black people for real, but I do care about my officer coming, my loved one coming home safely every night. So why don't we band together and say, we're going to get rid of all the corrupt cops, all the racist cops, all the crooked cops, to make sure that the police force is a safe place and that the community feels safe and that we're able to put those two groups together.
What I'm hearing in the conversation that we're having here is that you and Percy, of different generations, different times, you're half his age, think pretty much the same way that you think the same way today that he did back in his day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that for me, it's all about legacy. That's how I wake up in the morning thinking about what can I do to affect, not necessarily now, but affect my children's children. And so just like I'm half of Percy's age, what he did then is now what I'm walking through, you know. So we get to pick that baton up and then move forward. And one thing, though, that I look at, and I've read it in books, but I wasn't there, you know, just how people came in to try to infiltrate the protest, try to infiltrate the movement. You know, I don't know what you experienced at that time, Percy, but it's so strong today. It's really ugly and it's really strong and it's a real thing. And so I was just wondering from you, you know, how heavy was that?
Oh, it was exceptionally heavy. And then, of course, things were a lot more dangerous then because we didn't have such tools as videos to be able to show the situation at the moment. You see, all we had at the time, if there was someone that happened to have a camera, I mean, the technology wasn't there where you could instantaneously take pictures of. And it was all about word of mouth. And then, of course, it was a matter of the news media interpreting what they saw. In some cases, they had good intentions, and then, of course, they just didn't know. And then in other intentions, you had racism within the news media that was purposely distorting the news. But it's a little bit harder now when you have the instant communication
yeah.
that you have now.
Percy, are you surprised that you and Corey are on the same wavelength on all of this?
Yes and no. I have to be honest on all that. Because it's unfortunate that many of the people that start out in the movement, they get co-opted. Many of the members that start out in the movement, they become professional politicians, or they get a job from within the establishment, and then all of a sudden, they end up criticizing the protests of that particular day. In other words, they saw the need of protesting back when they were protesting, but then when they benefited to some degree from their efforts, now they began to line up on the side of the establishment and criticize those that are protesting now. Well, I happen to not be one of those. I'm going to be protesting the establishment because I see the matter as being profit. See, racism is a business whereby they profit. And the profit is shown in three different directions, in politically, economically, and socially. And it's not until we as protesters begin to cause that behavior to be a liability rather than an asset before we're going to see change.
You're not saying Corey's part of the establishment.
Well, I mean, she's part of the establishment in the sense that she's not of the run of the mill. See, those politicians that are out there protesting, like Maxine Waters, she's the type of person that I like to see all of our politicians to become. Her image. She's an activist locally as well on the national scene and any other scene.
And a St. Louisan.
And a St. Louisan, mm-hmm. for us to be proud of. And for if a person wants to be a politician, that's a real politician that is needed for the times.
You said I am of the establishment. Is that what you said?
Well, I mean, of the establishment in the sense that, you know, of that type of politics. You know, one that is running for office office. Yeah. But I don't mean establishment in the negative sense. I'm saying that even if I was an elected official, I would be doing some of the same things that I'm doing now.
You'd be like Maxine Waters.
Yes.
Same type. Yes. A final thought, Corey, we have to wrap this up. You have a final thought with all of this with regard to two generations sitting down and talking about demonstrations then and demonstrations now and their effectiveness?
Yes. Just I think that we'll make this work much better when we really open up and listen to one another. I know sitting in between, because I felt like I've, for a while, even during Ferguson, I felt like I was in the middle. I wasn't young enough to be the young crowd, but I wasn't old enough to be the older crowd. So it was like I didn't have a place. I had to make my own. And so I could understand both sides. You know, one group feeling like the younger generation, they're just wild and they won't listen and they're just unruly. And then the younger generation feeling like they won't listen to us. You didn't teach us anything before. Why are you coming telling us what to do now? Now is the time to break that down. So I'm seeing, just looking from pictures and hearing the stories, I don't know if that was the case then, but I know now we have a chance to fix it.
It's about economics. I think that as long as it becomes costly, the demonstrations are bringing about the pressure, the economic pressure on the city, making it accountable for the bad decisions that this judge made. Now, the next judge that is confronted with a similar situation is going to have to think about what the possibility of what is going to cause.
Consequences.
What the consequences are going to be, you see? And that's how people learn. I mean, it has to be a cost. And the economics, as you make it a more that type of racist behavior a liability, then, of course, I mean, you'll have some people seeing the need to make some sort of change. But as long as it is an asset, and it's been an asset for many, many years, because folks been getting away with it because it hadn't been no consequences.
And I don't know if you all heard, but one of our state reps, Bruce Franks, publicly called for the resignation of Chief O'Toole, of Interim Chief O'Toole. So those kind of changes.
We're going to leave it there. Corey, thank you so much. Percy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Longtime civil rights activist Percy Green and his younger counterpart, Pastor Corey Bush, with their take on how civil rights demonstrations have changed over the years. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.